1907, Transition v. Lenovo, United States.
May it please the court? Should we wait a minute?
Let's wait a couple minutes till the noise dies down. Okay, Mr. Beeman, you're ready? Both sides are ready? Why don't you begin?
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Arthur Beeman. I'm here on behalf of the appellant Transition, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, the issue here is threshold. Of course, it goes to subject matter eligibility, and the decision, the guidance we look to is from Alice itself, the Supreme Court's decision in Alice, which mandates that we look to what the patent claims are directed to. The transition patents are directed to an improvement in the technological arts. Specifically, the patents are directed to a dynamic transitioning of computer personality from a source computer to a target computer. Now, the district court held that the patents were instead directed to an abstract idea. That holding by the U.S. district court was in violation of Alice itself, in that the court held that the patents were directed to an abstract idea of manual migration where there is no record whatsoever tethering as is required.
So let's look at that, and just setting aside what the district court found, when I look at the claim one of the 877 patent, we're dealing with a method in the computer system for preparing configuration settings for transfer from a source computing system to a target computing system. And this is what we're dealing with. So it's taking configuration, taking settings from one computer and transferring them to another computer. Correct? I mean, that's
transitioning them.
Transitioning them.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you want to say transitioning because you want to say something is done with that data.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The word transitioning.
What's done with the data? Show me that in the claim.
Yes, Your Honor. The claims set forth, I may refer you back to claim one of the 877 patent. The claim is a set of rules where step by step you are identifying the configuration settings, you are providing an extraction plan, you're generating then transition rules, and I'm just obviously highlighting the elements here. And then most importantly, within that claim itself, there's a reference to the final element, transitioning one or more of the configuration settings, then from the source to the target computer. The technology provided in the patents represents an improvement because what we have today, of course, as is acknowledged in the patents, is a very heterogeneous environment of computers. When someone has the original computer, the source computer, they purchased a new computer, they have configuration.
I understand all that. Mm-hmm. I'm having trouble. By now, you know, we're ahead of where you were at the brief writing because we've had a lot of cases come out on 101.
Yes.
But this claim, in my view, is very broad. The district court kept on referring to it as dense, but it's broad. And what he said is it's devoid of any detail describing how, and he described it. So tell me what's wrong with his assessment. He says it's a claim, it performs the abstract idea of migrating settings between computers. It does various steps, identify where the configurations are stored, build a list of settings to transfer, fetch the settings from the old computer, and then manipulate the settings to match the format of the new computer. I think that's a correct recitation of what this claim does, devoid of any specifics about how any of these steps are accomplished. Am I right?
Yes, Your Honor. If the
Well, if that's so, then why is this not an abstract idea that fails under step one?
Well, that's not all it does, for one. That's not the totality. But most importantly, when we're looking at computer migration being identified as manual migration being identified as the abstract idea, that abstract idea can't simply float out there as two words referred to in the specification as to the problem solved. There needs to be an identification, a development, a record, an understanding of what constitutes that manual migration, much as in McRow, there was no record as to what constituted
What's hard to understand about the phrase manual migration? It's pretty self-evident after looking at column 2 of your patent, which talks about how once upon a time, or even today, when you're moving from one computer system to another, you want to take your configuration settings that you've customized on your old system, and you want to update your new system with those same configuration settings, and you would have to do that oftentimes by hand. And now that's the basic idea here, that your claimed invention says, well, let's have that automated. Let's have some computer software that just automatically does that kind of transfer of go and dig out the configuration settings and then install them in the new system.
Respectfully, Your Honor, that is not, or what is set forth in Claim 1 and the other claims to these patents, is not the only way that a transfer or a transition can be accomplished. And more importantly, if indeed we're looking at manual migration as the abstract idea, the Federal Circuit decisions in McRow and Enfish and Bascom all required that abstract idea be sufficiently developed in the record so it can be determined that what is being claimed is nothing other than a generic application of whatever that abstract idea is. Here, manual migration floats in the record as nothing more than two words in the specification.
I just told you my conception of what I think that means. What is wrong with my conception?
Well, Your Honor, first, I think it, respectfully, in terms of an individual's, whether it's yours or a judge's, whatever that conception may be, there needs to be, in order to establish that there is an invalidating abstract idea which the claims are directed to, that needs to be developed in terms of it being conventional and something that was well known.
I don't understand. Are we at step two now? Have we moved away from identifying an abstract idea and we're talking about whether it's how it's applied, an inventive concept?
I was not intending to move to that.
There are plenty of cases that look at the patent under review and specifically the background of the invention section of the patent to determine what is the state of play and what was known and conventional. And we have your inventors telling us what was known, old, and conventional. The idea that there was a common practice of having to transfer your configuration settings to a new computer system. That's the idea. Now we have an invention. The invention, apparently, from these claims is to have a computer, some computer, magically do that automatically.
Your Honor, respectfully, I think it goes well beyond that. And
so
moreover,
what's the inventive concept here? What is the technical inventive contribution to the useful arts that these claims express beyond the idea of using the old configuration settings to update your new system?
It is the dynamic transitioning of those configuration settings from the source to the target. And by dynamic, what is referred to and what is meant is the configuration settings, by way of example, could be operating on the source computer in a particular format.
Can we talk about the claims? Look at the claim language. I mean, read me from the claim language what your answer to Judge Chen's question.
Well, from the claim language, I would direct your honors to, in claim one, the last element, which refers to the transitioning one or more of the retrieved configuration settings. And here, I believe, your honor, the key words, from a format used on the source computing system to a format used on the target computing system. It's not just simply transferring, going from one point to another, especially as is identified and as is pointed out in the specifications when we're dealing with such an abundance of heterogeneous environments and computer systems.
Now,
and
my focus on that element is in the word transitioning, and I don't see how the claim tells us or claims any limitations as to how that transitioning occurs.
Well, the
so it seems to me that really what you're claiming is moving data from one computer to another, and that's an awful lot of that's a really big broad claim. That would almost claim all wireless technology, any type of transfer from one computer to another. Where's your limitation? Where do you show us how this transitioning is done?
The limitations for purposes of what is claimed in these patents as to what's being transitioned is set forth from the first element all the way to the the last element that I just identified wherein the word transitioning is used. It's a genus of rules. It's not the only way that this can be done. There are any number of ways in terms of the simple movement, if you will, of configuration settings from a source to a target computer. This does not set forth the only way to do it.
Let's when you're say, hypothetically, the development of our court's case law, and trying to figure out whether something like this is patent eligible, is you, the patent owner, need to have an argument that shows us what here in these claim limitations represents a technical improvement over a computer system, computer network, rather than just running some established concept on a computer. Okay, I think we articulated what the latter conception of these claims is, the idea of updating a new system with old configuration settings and having a computer magically do it. Okay, what is the technical advance represented in these claims, these claim limitations? Tell us that there is something. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. The technical advance is to, or what is set forth here in the way of rules, with these genus of rules, and when done in this fashion, and then when done through software, it provides, as is pointed out, a certain and in some instances significant measure of reliability.
When you say there's rules here.
Yes.
A genus of rules.
Can you drill down on that? Because right now, when I look at, although there's a lot of words on this page, when I look at the language here, to me it ultimately represents what any person would need to do if they were going to do an automated version of transferring configuration settings from one system to another. They would have to do these steps. These are kind of elemental steps for achieving that desired objective. So where in these claim limitations can you say, this is the interesting twist, this is our specific interesting contribution?
Well, certainly, as I referenced earlier, the transitioning, that element.
Let's say that last element is really the ultimate objective of what you're trying to accomplish.
Although it is an element.
It's not an actual technical step on the pathway to implementing an invention to achieve the objective.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, and I want to also identify other elements, but I do want to stay with transitioning for the moment. It is an important element, and it does represent very much the dynamic, the innovation here, and what's being achieved by these patents that goes well beyond just simply the transfer of configuration settings from one computer to another. By way of example,
that's all it says, right? And where does it claim any more specificity as to how it's done? Transitioning one or more of the retrieved configuration settings from a format used on the source computing system to a format used on the target computing system.
Correct.
What is the limitation of that other than...
The limitation of that is spelled out in the elements before, Your Honor, because in the instance, for instance, of an extraction plan, and then from there a transition plan, and what the elements spell out before the transitioning, that is not the only way that one goes about transferring settings from configuration settings from a source computer to a target computer.
You've got the step of identifying and then extracting and then identify the ones to be transferred and then retrieving them. Those seem pretty elementary, right?
Well, whether they seem elementary or not, we are looking and dealing with, respectfully, Your Honor, a 101 issue. And whether there is an abstract idea in the face of however these claims set forth the elements or not is really the issue before the court. And the record here, Your Honor, is that the simple words of manual migration, a judge coming along, as the district court did here, respectfully to that court, but just looking at manual migration, whatever that means, and all due respect to this court, it goes beyond... The Section 101 litigation, it goes beyond a judge simply looking at two words, manual migration, and saying, I think I understand this. I think I understand the word manual, and I think I understand the word migration. And it seems to me that these elements are all about manual migration, that being the abstract idea. There's no evidence of that. There's no record of that. That was incumbent on a party challenging the validity of a patent.
We have cautioned the district courts not to oversimplify this question of whether something is abstract or not. Moving beyond that and looking at your claims, and you're the one that narrowed us down to the word transitioning, to that element. Show me the limitation on transitioning. How is that accomplished other than to say that that's the important point where you move data from one system to another?
Yes.
What's the rule?
The transitioning, which of course was subject to claim construction, and
what's the rule?
The rule of transitioning.
That you're claiming.
Okay. The set of transition rules, then, if that is the question, Your Honor, is set forth in Claim 30. There's your set. And if we're asking specifically for the transition rules, those are spelled out in the data structure claimed in Claim 30. And there we have a specific delineation.
Well, you can't defend whether or not Claim 1 is abstract by looking at Claim 30. What in Claim 1 is the rule? You're saying Claim 1 sets out some broad rule. So you're claiming a broad rule, broad universe, and then you're saying, but it shouldn't be considered abstract because we've got some data points in Claim 30?
No. I was answering the question which was posed as to transitioning. Our view as to the rules, the genus of rules for Claim 1, it needs to be looked at in its totality for the ordered combination.
But Claim 30 does not go to a rule. It's just simply describing data structures. It's describing information for locating user preferences, information for locating visual elements, information. Now, if you want to argue that these are data structures that are being claimed here, that's one thing. But I don't see a rule here for transition.
Well, to the extent that Claim 30 informs the transition rules, what it sets forth are the structure of the transition rules, a genus of rules for the specific settings. And it is indeed a data structure. But in responding to Your Honor's question about the meaning of the term transition, this is what's being transitioned It's the personality object, which is also identified, I believe, is in claim two.
Well, I don't challenge it. To me, the question isn't what's being transitioned. It's data. You have an invention, and you're claiming that it's not abstract. The district court basically said you're getting data from one system, transferring it to another, make sure it fits. Okay? And you've narrowed this down to transition, and I've asked, where is the specific rule that you're citing that you have under Macro? Where's the specific rule in this case under transitioning? And instead, you point us to Claim 30, and that's not a rule. Those are just data structures or information for locating service providers, information for locating accounts, information. That's just data.
Right, for Claim 30.
So if we allow you to claim all of that, information for locating and all of these different elements, we're handing you the entire internet almost.
No,
that's
not
what transfer from one computer system to another one consists of.
No, Your Honor, and that's not what is being claimed. And again, getting back to what's involved in the dynamic transitioning, all of the elements of the claim, and we'll go back to claim one, all of those elements set forth the rules, in this case the genus of rules, for the transitioning of the configuration settings. I believe that what's claimed in claim one is very similar to what was claimed in Macro. And where it set forth that there was an automatic, and I'm not quoting it verbatim, but there was an automatic application of what the animation artists were previously doing. And in that instance...
Column 5, this is my last question. It says the CPU can be either electrical or biological. What does that mean? Does that mean that this isn't necessarily a computer-implemented system and method, as the word computer is traditionally understood? That's maybe biological, this could be all human implemented?
Well, Your Honor, in terms of the patentability issues set forth here in this matter, I would say there's no departure from the workings of a computer in the claims.
When you define CPU to include something as biological, what does that mean?
I would understand that to mean a computer technology related to some biological science or some biological issue. I don't know beyond that, Your Honor. It's not certainly not set forth specifically in any of the claims.
Okay. Let's hear from your friend, and we'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Todd Landis on behalf of Lenovo United States and Micro Focus, formerly Novell. I'd like to begin by answering Judge Reyna's question very specifically. There are no transition rules in these claims. In fact, there are no rules in the specification at all. They simply do not tell you how this invention is done or performed.
Isn't that an enablement or a written description problem rather than a 101 problem?
Your Honor, I'm not sure it is an enablement problem, in that the enablement problem would be addressing the elements of the claims and are those elements enabled. Certainly the patent talks about all of the functions that are addressed in the claims. It talks about them in the same functional language that you find in the claims. I think the 101 analysis takes us a step further, which is, have you actually invented anything? Have you told us how to do these functions? And that's where the claims are lacking. There's no description as to how to do any of the functions in the claims themselves. They just tell you the result they want to achieve. We want to identify some configuration settings, but we don't tell you how. We want to generate an extraction plan, but we don't tell you how. And if you look at that element in particular, I think there's something that's important there. It says that part of that is identifying the configuration settings known to the computer, but it doesn't tell you how to figure out which ones are known to the computer, which ones are not known to the computer.
Would it be your view that if the specification laid out in detail the how part of it, then that would save the claims under 101 for abstracting?
Your Honor, I do not believe it would save the claims. I think the claims themselves have to claim the how. They have to give us some specifics as to how it's actually achieved, what the invention is. Otherwise, you're allowing a broad claim that could be read in any way to go forward simply because the specification left some things unclaimed in the claim. And I think this court has addressed that issue on multiple occasions in its case law, that the unclaimed elements don't count. It has to be in the claims themselves.
What about your friend's argument about our case in DVR, which said, you know, look, they've identified a unique problem with respect to computers, so it's really in this different field, and that takes it away from the abstractness. And that's certainly the case here, right? That this is all in the world of computers. This is a unique problem created in a different technological world. It's different than the manual world. We all lived in.
Certainly, configuration settings in the context of this computer are, I mean, in the context of this case and these patents are based in computers. I would agree with that. But I don't think this is DDR. In DDR, the difference there is that you had a technological environment where they were actually changing and using technology to change something that couldn't be done manually. They were using a computer system in order to create a hybrid web page, a new type of web page. And it was something that advanced the technology of the internet beyond where it was. Here what we have is not an invention that improves computer technology at all. In fact, really what it's improving is not the computer itself. It's really improving the speed and efficiency of, for instance, an IT person at my law firm, or an individual's ability to move settings from his old computer to his new computer. In fact, if you look at Claim 1, and I think this is telling about the claim, it doesn't actually reference a computer doing anything. The only two computer systems that are referenced are the source computing system and the target computing system. They are both passive actors in the claim. The source is what has something taken from it. The target is what has something given to it. But nowhere in the claims that tell us how that is accomplished. The claim is simply devoid of that detail, as the district court pointed out.
Would you say that this case is more aligned with Digitech?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Digitech, In Re TLI, content extraction, all of those cases. This case aligns a lot more with those claims. And I would say that these claims even lack a scintilla of detail that those claims at least had. I mean, if you look at content extraction, for example, the claims at least spoke to having a scanner, having a server. The problem was that they didn't give any detail as to how any of those technologies were improved. They were just using them in their normal, generic way. In these claims, we don't even have that type of tangible component.
Do you agree for a Section 101 inquiry the statutory presumption of validity applies? Section 282.
Your Honor, I do not agree with that point. I think the presumption of validity is a threshold inquiry. It's the one of whether you get to go beyond and figure out whether or not you're going to have that presumption of validity.
Are you doing a statutory interpretation? I mean, right now, Section 282 says all issued patents enjoy a presumption of validity.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's special about Section 101 versus 102, 103, 112?
Because Section 101 is an eligibility standard. Are you entitled to even come forth and get a patent? It's different than when you're looking at once that has been determined, yes, you are entitled to go have your claims examined, have your claims issued. Now, you can have the presumption of validity. Now we have the issue of 102,
103. Is there anything in Alice or anything that the Supreme Court has said or that we've said that point you in that direction?
Your Honor, I think it's the lack of what's been said that has pointed me in that direction, which is none of the case law that I have seen says that that presumption of validity is still in place for Section 101 analysis.
Well, the statute that Judge Chen just referred to is pretty clear, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're creating an exception to the statutory language, and I think it'd be nice if you had something to hang your hat on.
Your Honor, I think the only thing I have to hang my hat on is just the fact that other courts, and I think at least somewhere in some of this court's cases, have said that 101 is a threshold issue.
Well, and, yeah, we all can agree to that part of it. Let me ask you, do you need that to win? I mean, do you think
we
prevail here if there's no presumption of validity given to these claims?
Your Honor, I think whatever standard this court wants to apply, whether it's a presumption of validity and clear and convincing evidence, whether it's just a de novo review of the lower court's findings, however you want to do it, these claims are so devoid of detail and so abstract that they don't pass muster under 101 under any standard.
Let's go back just a little bit. Wouldn't you say that there's a difference between validity and enforceability?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you can have a valid patent, but yet that patent is unenforceable.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. So if we're looking at Section 101, in terms of questioning whether some presumption exists, are we to say that a presumption of validity exists or perhaps a presumption of eligibility?
Well, Your Honor, certainly Your Honor is making a good point, which is the statute, I don't believe, talks about a presumption of eligibility. It's presumption of validity for the patent. And I don't think there's any law that I know of, at least, that says that maybe Section 282 encompasses the presumption of eligibility. I think that's the real point of Section 101. Section 101 is designed to determine, should we allow a patent to go forward?
There's a presumption of novelty. There's a presumption of non-obviousness. There's a presumption that there's written description support. There's a presumption of enablement. There's a presumption that the claims are reasonably clear enough to be definite. Why wouldn't there also be a presumption of eligibility?
Your Honor, I think all the ones that you just mentioned, again, the way I look at it is, they are after you have figured out, is this eligible or not? Once you've figured out this is eligible, and now you've issued it as a patent, the rest of those things apply. All those presumptions would apply.
What about the clear and convincing evidence standard, right? That's a little bit related to the statutory presumption of validity.
Yes, Your Honor.
I know of no case from our court that's ever said that the clear and convincing evidence burden that defendants have in attacking the validity of a patent doesn't apply to a validity question.
I think Your Honor's correct. I don't know of a case from this court that has said one way or the other.
But the district court concluded that there was no burden on you to establish by clear and convincing evidence that patent was invalid, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, you've got to defend that, right?
Well,
you want us to be the first one ever from the history of our court to say that we don't have to worry about the clear and convincing evidence standard. We can throw that away here.
So to Your Honor's questions, the district court, following a lot of some other district courts, did an evaluation of how other courts have been handling this question and concluded that that clear and convincing evidence standard didn't apply. But the court also said something I think more important, which is there's no factual disputes in this case. There were no factual disputes. And his point is the clear and convincing evidence standard is a factual standard. If there are no factual disputes...
To clarify your point, the other side will disagree with that. What he probably meant to say is there's no genuine issues of the material.
That's correct, Your Honor. There are no genuine issues of material fact, and since there are no genuine issues of material fact...
Well, let's go back. When you're looking at whether there's a genuine issue of material fact in dispute, you're assuming that you have a universe of facts, and now you're examining those facts. But really, was there any factual examinations or factual findings in this case? It seems to me that the court had a construction, and the entire decision is based on attorney argument, and the court's interpretation of the claim, which we know to be legal. But what facts were involved in this case?
I think what the court did was follow instructions that this court has set down in several of its cases, which is that you should look at the facts that are contained in the specification and the claims.
But all of those are intrinsic findings.
Yes, Your Honor.
We've said that those are legal questions. What's a factual question? One that we would owe deference to, for example.
Your Honor, I don't think there are any factual questions. If we're not going to consider the facts of the specification to be facts, as the district court did, if they're just legal determinations...
Well, why would a presumption of validity even matter in this case if there's no factual...
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. I don't believe it does. I don't believe the clear and convincing evidence standard should apply to this case because there are no genuine factual disputes.
But it's hard, right? I mean, they had an expert declaration for Dr. Mackin or something, and this is, I guess, on the step two question about whether or not this is an inventive concept. That is a question, right, that would often require outside expert advice or comment to establish that, right? I mean, one of our recent cases, I can't remember the name right now, but it talks about whether something is arguably an inventive concept. Doesn't the word arguably suggest that you want to hear the debate from the experts to weigh in on whether or not there's an inventive concept here? So why, at least on prong two, should the district court not have granted summary judgment but allowed more evidence and more testimony?
I think there's two reasons why they shouldn't have done that. I think the district court did consider a Ms. Mackin's declaration, but I think what the district court found was it didn't provide anything new over what the specification said, and a lot of it was just more of her conclusory statements as to what this meant of unclaimed elements. It was the same argument that the court was hearing from counsel for transition, which was the claims were claiming things like dynamic transitioning, but you couldn't find the word dynamic in the claims. And so I think the court properly disregarded Ms. Mackin's declaration in this case and relied on the facts of the specification itself. Said, I have the specification. It tells me what was going on in the past. It's telling me what they claim to have invented. And then when I look at the claims, I don't find anything there. They are devoid of any detail. And I believe that's a proper analysis for the court to have done, is to disregard declarations that don't provide any material facts. I wanted to answer one other question about a case about the presumption of validity. And this is from Ultramershal, and I'm not exactly sure which Ultramershal, because I know there's been a couple. But this is the quote. Indeed, applying a presumption of eligibility is particularly unwarranted, given that the expansionist approach to Section 101 is predicated upon a misapprehension of the legal history of the 19th
century. Is that a concurrence? That's a concurrence you're reading.
I think it may be.
Opinion.
Judge Mayer's concurrence.
Yeah, Judge Mayer's concurrence. I just wanted to point out that at least some of the court has seen patent eligibility.
Right. There's no binding authority.
No binding. I agree, Your Honor.
Part of one court.
Part of one court. Yes, Your Honor.
The minority part.
Yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. So, in conclusion, Your Honors, this patent, I think, in comparing it to other patents that have been found ineligible, content extraction, in re TLI, these claims are even more devoid of detail as to how anything occurs. They are purely functional in nature. And as this court just held in Affinity Labs versus Amazon, I think last week, when a claim is purely functional in nature, quote, that confirms that it is directed to an abstract idea, not a concrete embodiment of that idea. That is the case here, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Beeman, will we restore 2 minutes of rebuttal?
2 minutes?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. To be clear, there is a factual issue, and a factual issue was presented to the district court, and that factual issue was, what is manual migration? And we submitted in the record a declaration from one of the inventors, which remains unrebutted, where she averred that she was not aware of any manual migration anywhere in industry that was performed or accomplished with the steps spelled out in the independent...
The court judge cited to column 2 of the patent in the background of the section. That's the portion that I was referring to earlier in this argument. What's wrong with that discussion in your own patent for understanding what the judge was referring to? Talking about doing migration by hand.
There's nothing wrong.
Exact words from column 2.
There's nothing at all wrong in using that as a reference. The issue, though, is that single reference to manual migration does not tell us that manual migration is accomplished with the specific steps spelled out in the claims here, such that in terms of 101 eligibility, all we're doing is a generic computer application of what's being done manually. The specific steps of manual migration and what is involved there, there's no record whatsoever that even intimates that what's being claimed here, element by element, which goes to the McRow decision.
Give me something to focus on in the claim. I still don't have something in the claim to focus on that you want to point me to that convinces us that what the claims represent is something more than just the basic automation of migration of configuration settings by hand.
Well,
Your
Honor, respectfully, it can't just be a single element. The charge here, in terms of patent eligibility under 101, is to look at the totality of the elements.
Point me to something.
I would refer, Your Honor.
Claim?
I'm sorry?
Is it the whole claim?
It is absolutely the whole claim.
Then that's your answer.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
One more sentence. Your time is
up. Oh, I'm sorry. And then finally, Your Honor, we're not aware of any precedent whatsoever contrary to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Microsoft versus IV4, which says categorically any invalidity defense must be proved by clear and convincing evidence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We thank both sides, and the case is submitted.